Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
Welcome to this week's edition of Latin Waves. On the first part of the show, we speak to Jesse Freeston, a journalist from the Real News Network. He just returned from Pennsylvania, where he describes what's happening there as the Wild West, as oil and gas companies engage in a dangerous technique called fracking. On the second part of the show, we speak to Marcelo Saavedra, a professor and indigenous leader and founder of the Bolivia Action Solidarity Network. He speaks about how we should think about nature and how Bolivia and other countries responded to the disaster of the Copenhagen Conference. So stay tuned.
We're very privileged this morning to have Jesse Freeston. He's an independent journalist. He reports regularly for The Real News. Welcome to our show, Jesse. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning, Sylvia.
You have a story to share with us that comes from Pennsylvania. And it's again, you know, on this struggle of whose rights are central to how we organize our society. How do we, how we come to understand economic development? So, what's happening in Pennsylvania?
Well, I'll tell you what. I spent a month in Pennsylvania, and it was quite an eye-opening experience. Quite an interesting place. And one of the things that's going on in Pennsylvania that's really sort of defining things right now is the development of what's called the fracking industry. And fracking is sort of a short term for hydraulic fracturing, which is a form of natural gas drilling, which, to give a short explanation, is essentially you drill anywhere from, you know, in between 5 and 10,000 feet vertically, and then you drill horizontally and use explosives and, you know, millions of gallons of water along with chemicals and sand to create essentially little earthquakes at that level, which releases gas that's held in rock form as it stands, in shale, and then that gas is hydraulically pumped to the surface. It's hugely controversial across the United States and Canada right now, where the industry is just expanding remarkably quickly because of its effects that it's been having. The process itself is 100 years old, but was never done industrially until the last decade. And, you know, people are just starting to document the results of this process, as, you know, places like Wyoming, Oklahoma, and Texas, where it's been going on for a long time, and been demonstrating clear results that show the areas that have this happening are having numerous, you know, a variety of public health and environmental effects, anything from, you know, high rates of cancer and leukemia to flammable tap water. You know, where methane is leaking into people's tap water if they get their water from ground aquifers. And people, if you go on YouTube and search, you know, tap water on fire, you'll see people all over the United States who are putting up homemade videos of them being able to light their tap water on fire. And I don't mean just like a candle. I mean like a genuine explosion. So these sorts of things are coming up. And as people are experiencing this and they're going to the authorities, who are supposed to be sort of in charge of these sorts of things, they're finding themselves completely abandoned, in the sense that this industry in the United States is actually exempt from all the relevant environmental legislation through something that's called the Halliburton loophole, because it was implemented in 2005 when Dick Cheney, as vice president, had his energy task force. That was done largely in secret, and pretty much the only people who participated were CEOs or executives of industry companies, you know, in the oil and gas industry. And they passed exemptions on the oil and gas industry for the Clean Water Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Superfund Law, and numerous laws that have to do with community consultation. It's pretty much the wild, wild west out here in terms of these companies setting up. And, you know, in their argument is that in this economic crisis, this industry will provide all kinds of great jobs, and they've got studies backed up from, you know, quote-unquote reputable universities like Penn State, saying that it'll, for example, in the case of Pennsylvania, saying that in the next few years, they'll see 100,000 new jobs in the state which sounds, you know, great to the ears of these rural communities in Pennsylvania that are experiencing, you know, high levels of unemployment. The problem even being with that economic argument, even if you accept the idea that your well-being requires the potential destruction of your water base, I guess, you know, the, these studies, it turns out later, were paid for by the industry coalition, the Marcellus Shale Coalition, which is 100 or so companies, including Halliburton, including Encana, including a lot of these names that tend to pop up, and they paid for this study. And you know, the state itself did a study and found that the numbers anywhere closer to about 5,000 or 6,000 jobs instead of 100,000. So, you know, really, it's a very intense battle here, and Pennsylvania seems to be, you know, a real focus right now. But this industry is expanding. They say that shale gas right now has been found in 30 states in the U.S. and at least 5 provinces in Canada. British Columbia is going through this right now. Alberta, Quebec, New Brunswick, and potentially Ontario. And so this seems like the next front, and it really snuck up on myself personally to find out that, you know, Pennsylvania, for example, is on top of this formation known as the Marcellus Shale. It touches 6 states in the northeast of the U.S., and they're saying, you know, the estimates are ranging from that just in that area alone, there's enough natural gas to power the entire United States energy needs for anywhere from 2 to 30 years. Which also means, you know, trillions of dollars in potential revenues and profits.
You did an interview at the conference, at the gas industry conference, which I'm about to play. So would you introduce this video clip that people are about to hear?
Yeah, sure. So I went down to Pittsburgh on the day after the midterm elections, when the pro-drilling, well, both the Democrats and Republicans were pro-drilling in the governor race in Pennsylvania. One, the Democrat wanted to tax the industry. The Republican ran on that they shouldn't be taxed. The Republican won. The Republicans have control of the House, the state, the Senate, and the governorship in Pennsylvania. And this is going ahead. So on the day after the elections, they had this big industry conference, the biggest one of its kind, and there was hundreds of companies. I went in and talked to some people. We weren't allowed to film inside, so I wasn't able to interview many people, but I was able to pull aside one of the organizers for a quick interview. And I guess that's the clip you're going to play.
Network, I'm Jesse Friesen at the Pennsylvania State Capitol building in Harrisburg. This building is going to have a new occupant after Republican Tom Corbett won the governor race by 10 percentage points.
It's now time to come together to tell the rest of the world, Pennsylvania is open for business.
And that business is natural gas. Pennsylvania's race was unique in that it was fought primarily over the question of what to do with the massive Marcellus Shale natural gas deposit. Corbett ran on the platform that the industry needs to be opened immediately and without taxation.
We are the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. If we develop it and develop it now,
if current estimates are correct, then the Saudi Arabia example may not be far off. Predictions are putting the amount of shale gas in the Marcellus in the trillions of cubic feet. Said another way, these estimates suggest that the entire energy needs of the United States could be met from anywhere from 2 to 30 years by the Marcellus shale gas alone, with potential revenues reaching into the trillions of dollars. And all of this right in the middle of some of the world's most energy-hungry cities. On the day after the midterm elections, Pittsburgh played host to the year's largest conference of companies looking to develop the Marcellus shale. It was organized by Hart Energy Publications. The Real News spoke to Leslie Haynes, editor-in-chief of their flagship publication, Oil and Gas Investor.
The USGS Geological Survey is now saying this could be the second largest natural gas field in the world. Only larger ones are in the Middle East or in Russia. So it's extremely exciting for the U.S. oil and gas industry, but it's going to be important for the consumer too, because natural gas burns way cleaner than coal or oil. We have a 100-year supply.
The conference featured hundreds of the world's leading extraction companies like Halliburton and Shell. The keynote speaker was Karl Rove, former senior advisor to President George W. Bush.
This is the official Karl Rove welcoming committee.
Hundreds of people marched to the conference center to show their opposition to the drilling based on its effects on the environment and human health. The process for getting the gas is known as hydraulic fracturing, or fracking for short. It involves drilling anywhere from 3 to 11,000 feet below the Earth's surface, setting off explosives, then pumping millions of gallons of water mixed with sand and chemicals until the pressure fractures the shale rock below, releasing the gas into the well.
We're going to leave a message for the next governor. I have his phone number. You want to leave him a message?
Firing up the crowd was filmmaker Josh Fox, a Pennsylvania native who turned down a lucrative deal to lease his mineral rights for drilling. He then went on to make the documentary Gasland, which won the 2010 Special Jury Prize at the Sundance Film Festival. Fox's film documents the effects of fracking on families across the United States, where the process is already taking place.
Rhonda got really sick with extreme neuropathy and is in a lot of pain, and through spinal taps and everything to try to find a cause.
It just seems like in the last year and a half, I'm never healthy. And I've always been healthy.
I won't drink it. When Cabot and them came in to get the water and they were telling me it was okay to drink, I said, well, here, go ahead and drink it. And they wouldn't drink it.
His hair's falling out.
Yeah. And he's losing weight.
How are you? This is Josh Fox, and I'm with citizens from the city of Pittsburgh. We'd like to leave a message for Tom Corbett. We'd like to say we are going to ban hydraulic fracturing in the city of Pittsburgh, and we are going to ban it in Pennsylvania.
On the other side of the state, in Harrisburg, organizers with No Fracking Way PA set up a lemonade stand, offering passersby free lemonade made with tap water from the town of Dimmock, where fracking has already begun.
There was the Bush-Cheney Energy Task Force that gathered the industry together to decide what America's energy policy was going to be over the next decade or so. And in that policy was written in an exemption, now known as the Halliburton loophole, which exempts frack drilling operations from the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, the Superfund law. And that's really given the industry the go-ahead to be able to decimate these areas.
Now, exempt from these regulations, fracking companies aren't required to reveal to regulators the chemicals they're using. But tap water in communities like Dimmock have been found to contain chemicals like benzene and toluene, which are believed to cause cancer, brain damage, and other ailments. Haynes says that no connection has been proven between drilling and contamination.
The fracturing of the wells to create the flow of gas up to the surface. We've been doing that as an industry for 60 years. Over 1 million wells in the U.S. have been fracked with no incidents, no proven contamination of drinking water.
The Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection just ordered a $12 million pipeline to replace water for citizens in Dimmock whose water had been contaminated by gas. They proved that. They have proven that that gas is from Cabot Oil and Gas. And so the industry will continue to come out and say there's not a single proven case and we didn't do anything wrong. But this is in contradiction to the science.
I see the kids that are having rashes, the kids that are having diarrhea, the kids that are throwing up. I've seen the cattle that have died. I've seen all this. It's heartbreaking. And they want to deny it. You cannot be exempt from clean air, clean water, safe drinking water, the right to know in a Superfund Act and be a benign process. No one knew that when we signed leases. We signed them in 02, everything got passed in 05. They were preparing themselves.
Without the exemptions, they would be out of business. They cannot do this without passing along the costs to you, to the taxpayers, in healthcare bills, in water bills, in cleanup bills.
In his keynote address to the drilling conference, Karl Rove stressed that Republican electoral victories would assure that regulation won't get in the way of the industry's development. Water regulations like the Clean Water Act and Safe Drinking Water Act came into being in the early 1970s during a period of high environmental activism and outrage around the 1969 Cuyahoga River fire in Cleveland. Today, in some natural gas communities exempt from this regulation, the water is on fire once again.
Whoa, Jesus Christ.
Don't drink this water.
There's one clip that's famous, but we have several instances of that going on in the film. It's something that I heard about all across the nation. People are watching the film and then looking around and saying, oh, we've got gas wells in our neighborhood.
Oh! Yeah!
Lo and behold, they can light their water on fire. And they're living with those emissions coming out of their sinks.
Fox's film has been the central education tool for opponents of drilling in Pennsylvania, with public screenings taking place around the state. Screenings that drew the attention of Pennsylvania Homeland Security.
Let me just ask, first of all, is anybody here from Homeland Security?
According to an internal document leaked to the press, the Pennsylvania government was monitoring drilling opponents, anti-war groups, people opposing deportation of migrant workers, and other activist organizations. The document included a report on when and where Gasland was being screened. Outgoing Democratic governor and fracking supporter Ed Rendell said he had been unaware of the program and would not renew the $125,000 intelligence contract. Since then, further documents have shown that Homeland Security was actively recruiting a network of spies and sharing all reports of the list of 731 contacts, including numerous private corporations. Pennsylvania Homeland Security Chief James Powers emailed the report to private gas drilling companies themselves, writing, quote, "We want to continue providing this support to the Marcellus Shale Formation natural gas stakeholders while not feeding those groups fomenting dissent against those same companies." Powers has since resigned.
Even though the story has kind of left the media, don't forget that it's people like you who came out to see Gasland, who came to protests, who were labeled terrorists, environmental extremists, prone to criminal activity.
A key theme of Fox's film is the abandonment that victims of gas drilling experience when they have no government institution to turn to for help.
They contacted Mike by phone and said, "We've tested your water. There's nothing wrong with your water."
With this.
No one should ever have to go through what I went through and call them crying, begging for help, and be told no. And that's where the system is broken.
Proponents say natural gas is a clean path to energy independence. The most visible voice has been billionaire T. Boone Pickens. The former oil company executive has been gathering powerful allies, from Avatar director James Cameron to CNN founder Ted Turner, the largest private landowner in the United States.
You've got to go all American and get off the oil you're buying from the enemy.
This is not what T. Boone Pickens says, America's energy independence. This is more dependence on T. Boone Pickens.
Fox says that it's a question of priorities.
We want to spend $700 billion on the transition to natural gas, which will last 50 years, $350 billion for power plants, $350 billion for pipelines that are going to eminent domain through everybody's front yard. Do you want that? Or should we start working on clean, renewable energy right now that will last forever?
Co-drilling Republicans have the governorship and control of both the federal and Pennsylvania houses. A few Democrats have sponsored a law to bring fracking under existing regulations. But during his post-election press conference, President Obama twice highlighted natural gas drilling as a point of unity with the Republicans.
Let's find those areas where we can agree. We've got, I think, broad agreement that we've got terrific natural gas resources in this country. Are we doing everything we can to develop those?
With little political representation, opponents of drilling in Pennsylvania are facing slim chances of stopping the gas rush through the legislative process.
Because this is going to be very, very difficult. You need to get ready to do this quite a bit. You need to also probably get ready to do civil disobedience.
The amount of drilling permits and leases in Pennsylvania are exploding as we speak, and it appears that the boom is just around the corner. Join us for part two on the Real News Network as we explore the economics of the Marcellus Shale boom.
Now, you've raised so many questions in your film, and I wanted to just touch on a little bit. In terms of resistance, we're always told we have little chance, but in your film, you actually film how people are organizing to resist. So talk a little bit about the economics and how do we create a convergence of interest of people, because this really is ultimately about our own survival. You know what I mean? If it's allowed to happen in the U.S., it happens in Canada. Where does it end, right?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, don't have the answers in terms of what people should be doing and things like that. But I can tell you what is happening in Pennsylvania so far, and that is, you know, people, first of all, people are organizing to protest the inauguration of Governor Corbett, which will be in late January. I can't remember the specific date. I think it's I don't remember. It's in late January at some point. But, you know, the another thing they're doing is they're focusing a lot on public education right now, because it's amazing how quickly this has developed and how quickly it came to being and how little information. I mean, you know, the major networks are just getting on this now, you know, like 60 Minutes and, you know, programs like this, these major programs at the highest ratings in the U.S. are just starting to do their first reporting on fracking. So in terms of, you know, public education, that's still the main thing. So a lot of the groups that are organizing on this stuff are still, you know, trying to get screenings of Gasland in their communities, and get people out to those. And various kinds of creative public education techniques, like the lemonade stand that was referred to in the film. But beyond that, they're also moving locally. For example, Pittsburgh just recently passed unanimously 9-0 a ban on any more drilling inside Pittsburgh city limits, which might sound ridiculous, like, to think that they would be drilling inside Pittsburgh limits, but they already started. There is already drilling inside Pittsburgh city limits. So they voted unanimously at the municipal level to put a stop to that. The legal precedent in Pennsylvania, which has a whole history of mining and mining resistance, having been, you know, one of the key coal states during the coal boom years, and is now essentially economically in its coal bust years, that natural gas is coming into that void, that the legal precedent in Pennsylvania is that municipalities don't have a say over these things, that this happens at the state level, and that municipalities don't have the power to say no drilling in their specific communities. That, I mean, that challenge is coming now. It's a really sort of interesting, you know, breakdown of democracy as a whole, in the sense that you could have this local unanimity in such a large, you know, city like Pittsburgh, to have a 9-0 decision on the city council about something like this, and to go head on with the state. It's going to be quite interesting. And Philadelphia, being the other major population center, isn't on the Marcellus Shale. It's part of the 25% or so of Pennsylvania that isn't over top of the natural gas. So, you know, Pittsburgh is the population center of the natural gas, you know, area of the northeastern United States, and they've, you know, voted against it. So it's going to be, you know, quite the challenge legislatively and legally on that level. And but as you heard in the story, a lot of people are getting prepared to do civil disobedience as necessary. As of yet, there's been no announcement in terms of what sort of specific forms that's going to take. But it seems, you know, people are pretty dedicated, especially people who've already seen it happen in their communities, as was talked about in the film up in Dimmick, where their water is completely undrinkable. I think we'll have to stay tuned on that front. But in terms of the legality and the breakdown of legality, and one thing that's interesting off the top, you were talking about the experience of indigenous communities in British Columbia and how the land is viewed in terms of, and, you know, often that critique is that, you know, you can't own the land, and it's not up to individuals to own land and decide what happens with that land, that there needs to be more of a collective vision. The really interesting thing about where Pennsylvania and other states are headed, there's something that they're passing called forced pooling. And what this means is that essentially, as an individual, you don't even have your private property legal right anymore, in the sense that if a certain percentage of your neighbors in a defined geographical area submit or agree to leases with a drilling company, and you hold out, and your holding out is could be responsible for stopping the entire project, as deemed by the driller themselves. If they can make an argument to the government that says, or to the courts that says, because this landholder is holding out, this landowner is holding out, we can't develop this project, and we're going to hurt the financial interests of their neighbors, they can force a lease on you. And, you know, this is really interesting in terms of, so now we've gone from, you know, this individual private property conception back to a collective, but a collective that is controlled by a very few interests. So it's quite devastating. And, you know, it's interesting how, for example, the Wall Street Journal spun this concept, when they reported on forced pooling. Basically, you know, what they said was that forced pooling would force the companies to pay people for the land that they were drilling on, by way of leases. So they took it from the opposite viewpoint, that these people that don't want the drilling to happen are going to get money for the thing that they don't want to happen, because forced pooling is going to force the companies to pay them, as opposed to, you know, the analysis that most people have, which is what's really happening is they're having the drilling forced upon them. They don't want the money. They don't want the drilling. They want to be left alone, and it's being forced upon them. So, I mean, it's in terms of the legal situation, it's really, really wild, wild west out here. Private property law is potentially no longer enforced. We talked about the Homeland Security thing, you know, civil rights. You know, right to assembly, freedom of expression being challenged, environmental legislation not being applicable to what would appear to me to be the industry, you know, most necessary. I mean, they're creating mini earthquakes, you know, below the Earth's surface with chemicals that, you know, they don't have to release the details on. So it's a total breakdown of even, you know, the legal conceptions that are being critiqued, you know, by indigenous communities. This is even next level, that even that legal system that was already subject to great criticism and great debate is falling apart. And in large part doesn't even exist in places like Pennsylvania.
It's interesting how you bring in the concept of homeland security and how it plays out in this incident, because we saw with Latin America, with people opposing privatization of water, how they were immediately labeled terrorists and how they could be subject to long sentences. In this case, how are people coping, on one hand being denied their rights to their properties, on the other hand being criminalized when they oppose and defend their rights?
At this point, it's most people seem to be trying to get around their stories, trying to get their stories out, and whether that be through films like Josh Fox's. I mean, I would suggest people watch that film if they want to see, you know, more information on this. And then if you check out his website, there's been numerous attempts to debunk the film that he's responded to. So people who are interested in more information about this stuff, GaslandTheMovie.com, I believe is the website. But anyway, so I think at this point, you know, most of the people in those situations are just trying, most people that I met, for example, like the farmer you hear in the story talking about the various things that he's seen and the process that he went through, you know, they're just trying to get their stories out. They're just trying to be heard. They don't want it to happen in silence. And like I said, it's all developing so quickly, and there's a lot of organizational meetings going on, and people trying to feel out and build coalitions, you know, based on what tactics they're looking to take. And so it's really in an early phase, I think, of the resistance. Meanwhile, the industry itself is in full speed, high gear. So yeah, so we're still waiting to see exactly what forms the resistance will take.
Jesse, thank you so much for your thorough coverage on this story. How can people access your regular reports, and how can people access more information on this story?
Sure, yeah. All my stuff goes up on the Real News Network, www.therealnews.com. The Real News is not funded by any governments, corporations, or advertising. That's part of our constitution. All of you are funded, and a couple foundations that I've pitched in some money. And for more on the Marcellus Shale stuff, there's a lot of resources out there. MarcellusProtest.org are the ones that organized the actions you saw in Pittsburgh. There's No Fracking Way PA. If you just search shale drilling, fracking, punch this stuff in Google, you'll see a lot of resources. And GaslandMovie.com has a lot of resources as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. Take care.
My pleasure. Take care, Sylvia.
Bye. That was Jesse Freestone, a reporter, an international journalist, and a regular reporter for The Real News.
You are listening to Latin Waves, a weekly syndicated program. For more information about our program, visit www.latinwavesmedia.com.